We created Plan B with Carly.
Thank you for tuning in to Bummer Bipper Radio 98.7 FM. My name is Carly Willis, and you're tuned into Plan B, a monthly environmental hour where I unfold concepts, practices, organizations, and individuals that drive conservation of our environment. Many new stories that we hear today show us the dystopian possibilities of our future as we come together as a country to discuss environmental issues, challenges, and challenges that we face. It can be difficult to see past these daunting stories to find out how we can positively change our mindsets and change our habits. I hope to explore and unpack some of the ways that we can do this and hope that we can learn together. So today I am joined in the studio by Dr. Colin McGregor and Dr. Zuza Benhami Zakar. Welcome, guys. How are you going?
Thank you. Hi, thanks for having us.
Good. And today you're going to yarn to me. Well, we're going to yarn a bit about shopping environmentally, sustainably, and ethically. Before we do that, can you please introduce yourselves and tell our listeners a little bit about who you are, what you do, and where it is you're coming to us from today?
Sure. My name is Zuza Benhami Zakar. I'm a lecturer in corporate environmental management at James Cook University. I'm based in Townsville. I also coordinate the Bachelor of Environmental Practice program, which is an undergraduate environmental program for students interested in all aspects of environmental management, from the physical to biophysical to economic and policy sort of issues.
Beautiful.
I came to James Cook University 3 years ago in 2017. Before that, I lived on the Gold Coast and Brisbane. And often people ask me about my name and my accent. So my name is Hungarian and my accent is mainly Canadian, which is where I studied and grew up.
And Colin or Dr. McGregor, can you tell us about yourself?
Well, I'm from Scotland, if my accent doesn't give it away. I've been living in Australia for about 30 years, though, and I've been at James Cook Uni in Cairns, on the Cairns campus, for 9 years now. So I'm a senior lecturer in the same college as Zuza, and I support the Bachelor of Environmental Practice. My main interest is in sustainability and sustainable development, so my subjects tend to be on that topic.
Mm-hmm. And thank you both for coming on to have a yarn to me today. I guess the reason I wanted to talk to you about some of these topics around shopping environmentally friendly, sustainably, and ethically was I find it confusing myself as a consumer at times, trying to do the right thing. And there's so many different labels and ways that consumers are communicated to. And so I was hoping that you might be able to enlighten me on some of these questions that I have. And I guess one of the things that I've been looking at of recent is, you know, the organic foods and labeling and that sort of thing. You know, there's different labels that you see for organic. It might just say organic, it might say certified organic, it might say you know, a percentage of organic or something. So I guess I was just wondering, with organic you know, shopping organically, how do we know it, what these meanings are?
Well, I could kick it off and then maybe Zuza can come in. Of course, words like organic or environmentally friendly or eco-friendly, rainforest friendly or whatever they may be, that they can, I mean, just the very fact that they say friendly, for example, doesn't mean to say that they actually are. Mm. So, I mean, you're right to be confused, Carly, because it is an enormously confusing area. Mm-hmm. And for consumers, you know, who are trying to make the best possible choice for, in terms of being sustainably ethical and obviously being trying to find nutritious food. It is a very challenging area. When it comes to labeling, I mean, there are some ways we can discriminate. I mean, just because something says organic somewhere on the label doesn't actually really mean an awful lot. Mm-hmm. But if it is certified organic, then that's, we're starting to get somewhere. Mm-hmm. And the most countries, most developed countries around the world have some sort of certification process in place. And usually there are logos associated with those procedures and processes which require companies to certify and meet certain standards in terms of what they're delivering. So that's what we've got to look out for in this exercise.
Yeah.
I mean, we can talk about the specifics a bit in a minute, but maybe Susan wants to add a little bit more to that.
Yes, and I, it is very confusing, and they don't make it easy to do the right thing, even when you really want to do the right thing. What do you pick, and how much can you trust some of these labels? I think the certified organic or the organic concept is probably one of the easier ones to tackle compared to the eco and environmental friendly or rainforest friendly product stuff. And that is because it's really widely used, you know, the terminology that it's organic or certified organic. The other issue I think here is that these products cost more. And if they cost more, you kind of expect some sort of superior performance, I guess, or something out of these products, or you have the right to expect of those products. Gosh, there's, you know, just a whole show just probably on organic stuff. But I'd like to bring in to this conversation sort of the role of standards.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And there are some standards for some of these labels.
Yeah.
And for some others, there aren't any standards. Yeah. So usually if something is certified, then it means that there is some sort of standard applied, or a third party, somebody has verified it.
Yeah.
But at the moment, like if you're thinking of, there is no regulation for any of these terminologies. So no one can be fined if they claim something and it isn't, you know, so there's no authority overlooking it, like a government authority. Really, these are independent organizations. Yep.
And we rely on the ACCC to back us if we want to fight that, which people have in the past, but we rely on the ACCC, which is not really, that's like you have to really decide to fight if you find that one of these labels is,
in Australia we do have this thing called the National Standard for Organic and Biodynamic Produce.
Okay.
And that's run by the Department of Agriculture, Water and Environment. So uh-huh. that's a Commonwealth department. Mm-hmm. So that department approves certification bodies.
Okay.
There are a number of certification bodies. There's about half a dozen operating here in Australia.
Is that listed on their website too?
Probably.
Okay, great.
One example would be the Australian Certified Organic Organization, and there's a website for that. You can look that one up.
Mm-hmm.
So they are certified to use this thing called the BUD logo.
Yeah,
And that's another one that you can look up. It's pretty easy to see if you just stick BUD logo into Google.
Yeah.
You'll see the image there. So products that are have that logo on them have gone through this certification process, which Zusa is alluding to, and they have to meet certain standards in terms of the way that the products are manufactured and distributed, and they need to be ethical in terms of providing income wealth for farmers and so on. So that's one, probably the most prominent way you can sort of, you know, get through the certification process.
So if it says certified, it's gone through some kind of process of
There are some expectations about, I mean, obviously companies that want to use this logo and need to get a certificate of approval to use it, which means they need to go through a certification process, and they need to be audited by independent auditors, for them to demonstrate that they're actually doing what they say they're doing.
Yeah.
So, I mean, other countries have got similar sorts of things.
Yeah.
But it's not there's no one size fits all here. I mean, that's probably as good as it gets at the moment, I think. And unless you know what to look for as a consumer and you know what the Bud logo looks like, and of course not all, if you're determined to shop that ethically, you're probably going to struggle to find a range of products which will give you what you need as a consumer. But they're there.
So I guess that brings me to my next question, because I was then thinking, you know, I see a lot of like rainforest friendly, but I know that there's the rainforest certified. So I guess that's obviously from, also I have looked up their website. I did look their website up. I found them. They have a set of standards, as you said. So that's coming into that certified sort of area again, where it's a third party company who decides, hey, we're going to set these standards and people can sign up for our logo. But it's still not, they're not regulated either. Is that what you're saying? Or they are regulated through this body?
I couldn't comment about when you say regulated. I mean, are they legally bound? I'm not quite sure about that.
Okay.
But you're probably referring to the Rainforest Alliance.
Rainforest Alliance. Sorry. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. They have like a certified. I think they use the word certified in their Rainforest Alliance logo.
Again, you need to go through the certification process and. Mm-hmm. Once a company has gone through that and they've been approved, then they are deemed to be compliant, and therefore and that gives them the right to use the Rainforest Alliance logo, which is a little green frog. Again, there are some brands that carry this thing. I think Lipton Tea might be an example. You might find that frog on their packaging. Other brands of coffee and things like that. So products that are associated with rainforest or closely aligned with rainforest areas may be carrying that logo.
Yeah.
So also if maybe I can sort of explain also the different tiers around some of these standards, whether it's around organic or like the eco labels. So there is an organization, an international organization called ISO, International Standards Organization. Most people come across the quality, the ISO 9000 around quality, or maybe the environmental, the 14000 series of standards. Well, they do have these international standards for environmental labels and declarations. So you can find these, you know, at the international level. But what this actually says is that there are three different types of labeling and declarations. And then there is the type one environmental labeling, which is a third party, like you're talking about the Rainforest Alliance and so forth. Then the type two is a self-declared environmental claims. So it's just the producer or, you know, declares that their product is, you know, it has an eco label or something or whatever its benefits are. And then the type three is the environmental product declaration, which is just an environmental or a third type of environmental declaration. So I guess third party is probably the best you can get. Type two, type three is more around, I think, around life cycle assessment.
And can you describe the difference?
It basically provides a product.
Yeah. Type two and three sounded very similar to me. So what would be the difference between that? Basically, you're saying one is the same.
So one is a third party. So the third party itself provides the certification. You go to this organization that could be a company, so a for-profit, it could be a not-for-profit organization. And they will require you to show evidence of your product, whether it's, I don't know, organic or eco-friendly or whatever. And you have to collect that evidence and provide it to them and basically just follow their guidance on how to go about it. So, and then they make a judgment on whether you qualify or not or what you need to do. The second type two is a self kind of claim.
A self claim
the ISO,
of the producer or the person selling it?
I guess, so it depends. So there are different labels.
Beyond the product.
So you can, on any end of it, I guess, you can be a producer. It could be like, let's say I think one of the questions you sent was around sustainable fashion. So we can talk about the textile, okay, as having some sort of a label or eco-label or whatever, or recyclable or whatever. And then we could have the garment itself or the shop, a sustainable fashion shop of some sort. So there are sort of differences there. I think personally for me it would be most important that the way that the product is produced is according to a standard, so it's environmentally friendly, say, or rainforest or impact, it basically just has lower impact. Type two.
Sorry, I'm just going to say if you're anyone's interested in the what the Australian response to that national standard that Zuza was talking about. The organisation here is the Good Environmental Choice Australia, or GECA. Again, there's a website for the GECA. And the logo clearly there, pretty clear when it says Good Environmental Choice Australia. So that product would comply to that Type 1 international standard, which is regarded as the higher out of the three different levels or types of standard that the approach is. And the significant point, as Zuza said, is that the audit is carried out by a third party.
So I guess with the other two, so the third party one is understood, and then you've got... Zuza was just explaining someone just claiming that it has less impact as the second,
they develop their own label, or they label themselves and just write on there that it is environmentally friendly or recycled product or something like that. Yeah. It still has a standard to follow to be able to use that to get the
standard.
ISO. Yeah.
That's what you're saying.
The Global Ecological Labeling Network, or GEN, whilst it acknowledges that there are these three types, it doesn't really put much, I don't think it puts much value in those, certainly not in type two, because it's open to virtually anything. Type one is really what you're after here.
And the third one, what is that about?
So the third one is when an organization provides a detailed description of its product and its processes, and
on the label, like they publish it to the consumer to see.
It's not something that would be like on a packaging. It's much more thorough than that, but it's available, and it's like a disclosure statement about a product. So you have to kind of dig around to find it. And according to the guidance, it doesn't really qualify. So it wouldn't put you at like a 3 stars out of 5 or anything like that. It just states what's sort of happening and according to that standard. And you make up your mind whether you think that is, how that scores.
Yeah.
So that's the third type.
So to summarize that really, really simply and plainly for people listening at home, you've got one where it's a third party, someone other than the seller that comes and says, hey, these are the standards. We're going to certify you if you meet them. And if you meet these impacts or lesser impacts, then there's the seller deciding, hey, we're doing pretty well. We like our standards. We're going to say we're friendly. Sort of thing. oh, they're going to say we're environmentally friendly. And they might be able to give that information to you, but it's that information is probably published internally rather than like a statement. And then you've got a third sort of standard where the organization has a really strict internal process that they also publish so that people can read about and understand the product and the standards and impacts.
I mean, in the third type, it's a little bit more than that. They're often assessed by qualified third parties as well.
Okay.
But the emphasis there is on the life cycle elements. So there's usually some effort to demonstrate a life cycle assessment process, and we can talk about that a bit later if you want, but fundamentally it's looking at the whole supply chain from the resource, requiring the resources to the manufacturing to distribution to the consumption, and then in theory how that product is then recycled or given back to for recycling or reuse purposes. And again, we can talk about that a bit more a bit later as well.
Yeah.
So I mean, the whole, I mean, talking about International Standards Office or ISO standards, there's a whole range of standards that apply to life cycle or cradle to cradle, so-called cradle to cradle labeling as well, which goes to the heart of this. I mean, it's another level of assessment, but fundamentally, this type three that we're talking about usually implies that that there's some demonstration of a life cycle assessment of some kind.
Okay, beautiful. Thank you. We might go to a really quick break. We'll be right back. You are tuned into Plan B with Carly here yarning with Dr. Zuza and Dr. Colin from James Cook University about shopping environmentally friendly, sustainably, and ethically. Thank you.
I'm Carrie Underwood.
Hey, this is Maren Morris.
This is Jana Jeffries.
This is Catherine Britt.
G'day, this is Jem Cassidaley.
Hi, this is Amber Joy Poulton.
Hi, I'm Felicity Urquhart, and you're listening to BBM 98.7. Turn it up.
I get high with a little help from my friends. Ooh, I'm gonna try with a little help.
Welcome back. You're tuned into Plan B with Carly. Today, I am yarning with Dr. Colin McGregor and Dr. Zuza Benhami-Zakhar about shopping environmentally friendly, sustainably, and ethically. We've just been yarning about the different standards for organizations or sellers or providers or producers that are labeling and putting forth their products. So really interesting yarn there. I guess my next sort of topic of interest around shopping environmentally friendly, sustainably and ethically was around the Australian Made logo. Now, I've recently noticed, maybe in the last 8 months, I don't know, it could have been going for longer, I probably just haven't noticed, that it's now got 99%, 95% on the Australia, you know, as Made in Australia logo on our produce and goods. So I was just wondering, what does this mean now? Does it mean, and you know, there's been a lot of controversy in recent years and in the past where goods have been found to be imported and packed in Australia or New Zealand and sold to consumers as Australian or New Zealand food and what have you. Like, what does this mean with the Made in Australia logo? And then we've also got terms like Australian produce or local. This logo has been so long standing and I had so much trust in it, but now I've been feeling a little bit funny seeing that it's got 99% and 95%. Do you guys have any insight on that logo?
Look, Australian Made, it's not a bit hard for me to comment around that one. I think there's Australian Made and then there's another definition which is, goes to whether or not it's been processed in some way or even just packaged in some way here in Australia. And maybe Zuza can comment more about that. I mean, what I would say is when we're talking, I think when it comes to thinking about this in terms of sustainability, what people are interested in here is whether they're supporting for example, if it's food, are they supporting local farmers? And by local, here I'm thinking here nationally. Mm. Are you supporting people within the region? I mean, the word local, I mean, all these words are a bit vague because, yeah. I mean, economists talk about local when they talk about their trading partners in the immediate trading zone. So, I mean, they talk about Southeast Asia as being local, when clearly they're not. I mean, for us as consumers, when we go to the supermarket, when we're thinking local, we're thinking, you know, within a few hundred kilometres of where we live, exactly. So, I mean, all these terms become a bit vague and problematic because of that, I think. Mm. I mean, it all gets a bit confusing. I mean, when obviously, if for me, I live in Cairns, so when I'm thinking about buying food that's local, I'm thinking that it should be coming from within, if not Cairns, certainly within the surrounding region, perhaps the Tableland region, up as far as, say, the Daintree, or as far south as perhaps Mission Beach, something like that. Mm. For Zuza, living in Townsville, local means something different for her. As far as the Australian Made logo is concerned, I do know that for foods, again, for in terms of labelling, there can be some insight provided there. So there are standards about what food producers, for example, have to put on the labels to inform the consumer about what's in the product. And one of those things is the source of where the food comes from. So if it is an imported or it's got imported content in it, then it has to actually say that. So, again, we have to be prepared to do a bit of work. I mean, there's no easy fix to this, unfortunately, and labelling can be very confusing. We need to be prepared to sort of make the effort to explore this ourselves, and that means putting our glasses on, unfortunately, if you're as old as me, and looking at the very small print on the labels when we're in the supermarkets. Mm. Of course, the other thing is that you can shop locally, true locally, in farmers' markets and use locally, local distribution networks, and so on, that way you know.
I've done that at Rusty's, and I asked them when it said local, and it says, I said, oh, okay, where are they from? And it was Brisbane.
Yeah. Exactly. Not... So even in situations like that, we've got to be very careful. And usually, even within farmers markets, there is some statement about where those vegetables and fruit, etc., are from. And of course, you can ask. I mean, you can ask the vendor, where are you getting this stuff from? That's often the only way to cut through. I mean, a lot of the people that are in markets like Rusty's are actually not farmers, even though they might call themselves farmers in markets. They're often just retailers, and they may be buying the produce from quite far afield. And it might be from the Tablelands, for example, but it might have gone to Brisbane first and then been housed in a warehouse there somewhere and then come back up. I mean, it's when it comes to food and oils, I mean, this is another area of great contention and great concern, I think.
Yeah, well, for example, that Made in Australia logo was always, for a very long time, how we understood where it came from, because it's not in fine print. It's a big green, very clear green and yellow label that's sort of usually front facing. So it's like, I don't know now, is it a distraction? Is it like, look at this label and don't look on the back? I don't know. It seems very strange to me to have 95% and 99% and this, like, it should either be yes or no, like.
I mean, I echo Colin that if I really wanted to make sure that the produce is Australian, I would look at the packaging, where there's the information about the nutrition value and the ingredients and so forth, which is very much governed by, you know, law and stuff. Yeah. And just check exactly what it says, where it's made, and not so much trust the
logos and
the logo to really because it could, and I mean, maybe I'll just be contentious here and say, why would you why are you looking to purchase something that is made in Australia? What is your own personal kind of, what is it that you want it to mean for you? Do you want this to mean jobs for you? Are you looking for a guaranteed quality? Are you looking for sustainability, that the food malls and stuff, that it's not being hauled around? You know, some of those questions come up. I think most people would understand that a Made in Australia logo means that it benefits Australians. By purchasing this product, you're benefiting your Australian community,
I guess,
and therefore would be, yeah.
And I guess as well, it's about, I feel for myself, when I want to shop locally, I'm also, to me, in my train of thought, and correct me if I'm in, if my train of thinking is perhaps not spot on, but to me, I think, well, if I shop locally, I'm cutting down on that extra transport, which is then that it's like a circular thing. So it's also me thinking about my environment.
Sorry, I'm actually in the middle of an interview. Can I call you back in a few minutes?
Sorry.
That's all right.
Okay, see you.
Okay, thanks.
No, that's all right. So yeah, I was just saying, my thought as a consumer myself, and being someone inherently interested in protecting my environment and being more conscious about that, I sort of look for ways that I can be more environmentally friendly. To me, shopping locally is also cutting down on emissions and transport and handling, as well as supporting local. So I guess that's where I am coming from in this program, is sort of helping people to understand how they can inform themselves so that they can make those decisions when they're shopping, because it's very confusing. But if you say that, imported facts have to be stated on the label, then that's probably something to just don't worry about the logos, go straight to the information on the back and read any imported information, and you can sort of determine for yourself, maybe.
The issue particularly comes up when you're buying processed foods. So if you're buying, say, for example, tinned fruit, it's entirely possible when you read the label that it might say something like manufactured from local and imported products. Or fresh orange juice is another classic example where you see that sort of thing. So, you know, if it says local and imported, I mean, there's no real regulation to say that a certain proportion of that must be local and a certain proportion can be foreign. So it's go on, Carly.
I just wanted to say that if I were to advise young people or some of our students who would come to me and say, look, I want to buy more sustainably, ethically, how do I go about it? I would say probably pick the for food, for instance, just pick the item that you consume the most of.
Yeah.
Put those in order. So maybe look at your milk, so your bread, whatever, or pastas or whatever, and start with there, because that's if you want to make a bigger impact, or then and look into that organization, Google that company, where are they bringing it? Can you find out or any of the companies and go from there? And I think that because there's just this amazing amount of information out there, but also bombarding you with marketing through logos and things, and it wears you down, and I don't think anyone can. If anyone wanted to set out to make sure that everything they buy is the most sustainable that is out there, that might take them, years actually to research that and to be able to live that way. Mm-hmm. And then by the time you find out, they might as well change. The company might change where they bring something in, and it's never ending, I guess, is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, it is. I guess it's just about getting some really great tips and things like that for people that are, looking out for this. So, understanding that these words that are being used are sometimes just marketing, or sometimes just an internal tick, as opposed to strictly adhered to sort of process or certification. So that's really, really good. We might go to another really quick break, and I'll be back. I'm here yarning to Dr. Zuza Banhami Zakhar and Dr. Colin McGregor about shopping ethically, friendly, sustainably, and environmentally. Thank you.
Hi, you mob. My name's Owen Craigie, and you're listening to BBM 98.7 FM.
Welcome back. You are tuned into Bama Bipra Media 98.7 FM. I am here yarning with Dr. Colin McGregor and Dr. Zuza Banhami Zakhar. So we're just yarning about shopping ethically, environmentally, and sustainably. Obviously, these are big topics, big issues, big concepts. So we're really only scratching the surface today, but still a lot of insight coming from Zuza and Colin, who are sharing some knowledge with me on this. Welcome back, guys.
Thank you.
I guess the next sort of thing, point of interest for me was the packaging that we see in the shop. So one that sort of come to light in recent years, thanks to ABC's War on Waste and a few other big programs and exposing this kind of thing, and obviously all of the plastic conversation around plastic and our recycling industry has brought to light is all this packaging in the shop. So a lot of things that we see packaged are like tomatoes or and I find a lot of organic goods actually seem to be packaged quite heavily. I don't know, there could be a reason. I haven't actually looked into that too much, but I guess I was wondering, you know, is this something that are producers or sellers of these products expected to package these goods? Like, is that a standard that's imposed on them, or why is everything so heavily packaged, especially organic stuff?
Yeah, I mean, it's a good question, and I've certainly seen some dreadful examples of this myself. I remember visiting a supermarket in the UK once, who will remain nameless, but they were selling apples, single apples on polystyrene trays wrapped in plastic film. I mean, sure, we all want to know that our food is coming to us hygienically and safely and all the rest of it. But, I mean, obviously that level of packaging is complete overkill. I mean, if you were to do a cost-benefit analysis or a life cycle analysis on one of those apples, you'd find that there was far more embodied energy in the packaging and much more resources used up in the packaging than there ever is in the apple itself. And in fact, the price that we pay for the apple should probably be about 10 times as much if it comes in packaging like that to compensate for the damage that we're doing to the planet. But anyway, at the risk of digressing, you tend to see this problem more in the supermarkets than you do in fruit and veg shops or greengrocers or whatever. So again, you know, it's a case of buyer beware. You shop where you think you're going to get the best value, not just for yourself and your family, but also for the planet. So there's actually no reason really why you can't buy fruit and veg that's used the way it's supplied, and then these supermarkets then choose to wrap it up for whatever reason. I mean, I suppose we're now living in a COVID-19 world, and things have changed as a result of and everybody's very paranoid about passing this infection on and picking it up, and people are handling fruit in the supermarkets, and they're choosing, you know, we pick it up and we look at it and no, we don't want that one, we put it down and we pick up another one. So people are handling this all the time, and it's absolutely, you know, not unreasonable to say that virus is being spread in that manner. That's exactly one of the ways it's spread. Mm-hmm. So one of the challenges in the modern era is the fact that we're now having to deal with this. And so there is an argument for increasing use of plastic or whatever to protect us from things like the COVID-19 virus. So it's a retrograde step, if you like, to be going down that road. But I don't know what the answer to that is.
I just feel like to package something, you still have some degree of handling. Like, you can't just have robots and machines to sell stuff as cheap as it's sold, packaged. You just can't. You really can't avoid handling. So whether it's being handled in the shop or whether it's being handled in plastic packaging, it seems like especially when you buy those apples that are cut up, I don't know, that must be handled at some point. I don't know, like, to me, but I guess
any food that's processed, whatever level, is going to be handled a lot more.
Yeah. Zuza, sorry, what were you?
Yeah, I guess I'm going back as to why is it sort of necessary to package food, and why would organic produce be more packaged than perhaps other foods? And I guess I would say that partially probably because organic produce is more expensive. Mm-hmm. So the packaging appears to protect the produce or keep it fresh and sellable for a longer time, perhaps. Another reason for packaging is you know, you want to sell a pack rather than individual pieces. Mm-hmm. So it has some sort of a marketing kind of connotation, you know, to be able to sell a whole pack of apples rather than just one or two. Look, I think definitely in this COVID-stricken world, what will be the role of packaging in the future is a good question. But I suspect we will see more packaging of certain products, and just looking around, you know, hygiene and how to ensure hygienic way of life in general. But it's also interesting to know that if we can't, and to some extent, I don't think we can avoid packaging, then if we need to package, then what should that packaging look like? Mm-hmm. And can we package in a way that is more sustainable than what we're using right now?
And what would your insight?
Another question I think that's important here is, in particular with organic produce, for any of you that if you shop for organic produce, particularly in organic stores, you'll often find that the produce there comes from quite far afield. It's very often that the produce is not local or even Australian. It may come from Argentina or from on the other side of the world. So, this is one of the problems about shopping organically. Just because you're shopping organically doesn't mean to say you're avoiding food miles. So, you have to sort of question whether or not, the source of the food. But if it is coming from those kind of distances, then obviously it's a long time in transport. And probably implies you need more packaging to protect it. So,
I guess that brings me to the next point, which is when it comes to packaging, there's a lot of to and fro and a lot of when all the plastic, the state of our oceans and all of that sort of thing was exposed. There's all these bamboo products coming out, and all of a sudden we saw lots of biodegradable packaging. And then there's, compostable. My impression and my understanding is that compostable is probably the best, but I just thought I'd put it to you guys to see what your insight is on different types of packaging. Is there anything better than biodegradable, compostable, or paper? What's your sort of insights on the different kinds of packaging that we see, like different materials?
Well, the so-called definition of biodegradable is that it's made essentially the package, for example, is made up of organic materials such as, it could be cardboard or generally paper or something like that. So it's organic in that sense, and it will break down fairly easily in the environment. And when it does break down, it's all natural materials, and indeed it can even go towards sustaining the soils and so on. Obviously, things that are not biodegradable would be things like plastics. There are exceptions, but as a rule, are non-biodegradable.
We're seeing a lot of biodegradable. They're saying biodegradable or bioplastic. They're using this bio or biodegradable on plastics. Plastics,
There is, and some of them some are, again, some of them are better than others. I mean, there are some plastics that are made out of rice and things like that, which supposedly would break down absolutely naturally. But a lot of things that are called biodegradable as plastics just simply means that they don't last in the environment for long periods, hundreds or even thousands of years. They will break up, but inevitably they turn into microplastics and end up in oceans and causing all sorts of damage. I mean, really, we should be avoiding all sorts of plastics. It's a non-renewable resource fundamentally. It's made out of oil. So, you know, anything that is non-renewable, we should be trying to minimize the use of. And any packaging made of non-renewable resources is quite frankly a waste of resources. Mm-hmm. Biodegradable or not. As far as compostable is concerned, I mean, the idea of something being compostable, it's just an extension of the biodegradable idea, except that those materials usually have nutrients that are of value to the biosphere in some way. So they might contain elements of nitrogen and phosphorus. So when those materials break down, they end up being fertilizer for new plant growth and so on.
Susan, do you have?
I agree with Colin. Yeah, I agree with Colin on all of those things. And my looking into this topic also indicates that biodegradable, when you're talking about biodegradable plastics, typically it means that there is one group that is made entirely from plants, corn, sugar cane, or rice, or whatever. Or they're made from sort of petrochemicals. What is important to understand is that there is a class of biodegradable plastics that are actually made from what is called oxo-degradable plastics. And those are the ones that I believe they contain a piece of metal or little tiny pieces of metal. And so that allows that because of the heat, then the plastics break down. But the problem is that the plastic breaks down into smaller pieces. And that's where you have problems with microplastics. So the plastic compound, I guess, is still there and can be ingested by wildlife and so forth. So it's not really, I mean, eventually it will break down, but we're talking about huge amounts of years. Now, the other thing to think about both with compostable and biodegradable stuff is that it's not like you just throw it out there and it'll just biodegrade into nothing. A lot of these standards that apply to these products or packaging relates to, you know, in a commercial facility, recycling facility or a facility made for composting or biodegradable conditions. So if some of these products end up in the landfill in oxygen poor conditions, they can't really break down like they would if they were to end up where they're supposed to. So, and that is kind of beyond your control, right? Even if you're trying to do the right thing and you're separating your plastics and you're putting them in the recycling bin, and where does your landfill go? You're supposed to separate these items differently so that they end up where they're supposed to, so they can break down properly.
Yeah, that's right. And that's, I guess it's a big learning process, but I'm going to go back to your initial, when we were talking about the different products and understanding where they're from and what they're about. Is what someone said to me is pick a few things to work on at one time, because changing your whole lifestyle is going to take a while if you're just sort of starting to want to learn more about, being more environmentally or sustainably or ethically conscious, is pick a couple of things and work on those to begin with. And then I think the rest become a lot easier as well, because you sort of, your thought train or your mindset is sort of trained to look for these things. But thank you so much, both of you, for coming on the program. I feel like there's a lot more to chat about, so maybe we can have you back one day. Feel free to reach out to Bummer Bipper Radio if you've got anything exciting happening at the uni. Love hearing what JCU is up to. It's very, very, especially in these sorts of research and science-based subjects, there's so much going on at JCU. So, appreciate your time and coming on and sharing that with me.
No problem.
Thanks for having us, Carly.
Yes, thank you.
Nice to meet you, Carly.
Yeah, you too.